you want to, let's see, where were you born?
Edgewood.
And were you born there also?
No, I was born in Perryville.
Huh.
Churchill County.
Uh-huh. And how did you come to Harford County?
Well, I tell you, years ago, there wasn't much work around on the railroad. See? My people were all railroaders.
Hmm.
I was a freight conductor for 44 years and 2 months. I retired in 60. So, anyhow, get that picture of the old store, will you? And so, anyhow, I used to come down here. My grandfather had this farm across the railroad track here for years. He was farm for Cadwalders,
uh-huh.
See?
Uh-huh.
Well, every weekend or so, I'd be on this farm,
oh,
to the Harvey Grass, where uh-huh. we lived in Harvey Grass.
Uh-huh.
And I met her as a girl,
oh,
years ago.
Uh-huh.
So we finally got married, and they had to move from where they lived over where the arsenal is, down to Bush River, on account of the government buying all that ground, see?
Mm-hmm.
And they lived in a house right there at the end of the bridge, this end of the bridge. As a matter of fact, I have two daughters here, was born there.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 18 rooms in the house.
Hmm.
So I got married, and my mother-in-law, she wanted me to come to stay with them, which I did for 8 years. And the finer people I never knew than her husband, Jim Brady. He worked on the track, but when my grandfather retired, he got the job. See?
Mm-hmm.
And so I stayed there with him for 8 years. Oh, I had a couple boats and nets. I caught a money a piece in my day, but I never sold them and gave them away.
Hmm.
That's facts, true facts. So anyhow, we lived in Harvey Grass, see, for 40-some years, my father did, on Stokes Street, on the corner of Stokes and Congress Avenue, a lot of old concrete houses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got to tell you what I'm talking about. I slept with a priest.
Hmm.
And I'm a pastor. Now, how that happened, Father Fitzgerald was his name. And a fireman never lived. He'd go around and cut grass for people, free of charge. Years going by when I was a boy. And he has a bunch of stone in his backyard, 45 granite, which is now in a little church over in Battleton. And another boy and I hauled that over in a boat,
hmm,
years ago. And I'll tell you who's on the where we put the stone in a boat, something like a boat, I forget what you call it, but anyhow, it belonged to Mary Vanover, old Mary Vanover, see?
Mm-hmm.
And he let us use it.
Hmm.
We had Father Fitzgerald use it. Mm-hmm. So this boy and me, Alan Bart, he's dead now. He used to be a mail carrier in Harvey Grass, and so we took us over there to summer, and we helped to grade the lawn, get ready for this little chapel, I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some Catholic boys and a priest, Father Erner, from Chestertown to come up to help. Well, it was such a hot day, all they did was sit in the shade of that tree. And me and this bad boy did the work. But we only worked a half a day, and the rest of the day we'd go swimming. And we served about 2 weeks, and Father Fitzgerald, he paid our board, and people named Moore. I don't know if his relatives are still living or not. But I haven't been over there to see that little place since it was built. Now, I'm speaking way back. Excuse me. Years ago, and well, they unloading the stone, this bird boy, and well, I bet you about 14, 15, we took some girls out in the boat for a ride, not a thinking about coming home with gas. So we left them out and we got the scow in tow and we got over here to Pursuit Island. Well, that Murray Vandiver owned the upper end of Pursuit Island. There was three owners, Murray Vandiver, Smith, and well, I forget the other one, but anyhow, we went in there to get some gas. Well, I knew him. I went to school with his son, Bob Vandiver, and he said, well, I'll tell you, boys, it's getting late now, and it's already dark. Come on, stay with me all night. So we did, and he gave us gas to come up the rest of the river with. I left the scow there, anchored her. So that's the next morning. So anyhow, we come up the river, and I never will forget it. Dave Fisher, the saloon keeper in Howard Grass, it was his boat that we had, and he came down in his cabin boat looking for us with Father Fitzgerald, but we was on our way home then. We used to help him to cut that stone, see, as a boy. And what he'd do, he'd take a stone about as long as one pair where she is, and about every 8 inches, you'd take a chisel and go down about 8 inches, see? Mm-hmm. And it'll crack. Mm-hmm. That's the way we got the stone for that little chapel over there. Mm-hmm. So, anyhow, that night, we didn't have sense enough to call up our parents to tell them we were on our way home, see? Mm-hmm. You know, boy like. And that night, there was a man, an automobile with his wife over Union Avenue Bridge in Havergrass, went down in what they call the old cut. Well, they were killed, and there we was, couldn't find us. It was another little fix we was all in. So we got straightened out on that. But thinking about this Father Fitzgerald, he would do anything for anybody, cut grass and oh, hedges and all, just done it for a fast time, see? No, I'm telling you the truth. He was a wonderful man. And he followed the Catholic faith, but you'd never know it. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you the way he used to dress. He used to dress with a straw hat, then summertime, white shirt, khaki pants and slippers, and there's always a cigar in his mouth. So this was in the singing. Every spring it used to be years ago, I don't think it is now, but Coolihan and Hogan and Silver and Spencer each had fish houses and they packed fish, see? And these hobos, as we call them, would come up there to help to do all this work. About a month or so it was. Mm-hmm. So one hobo came up to where we were. We was right up there putting sod down for the house where I lived in. Stokes Street between Stokes and Congress Avenue, and this was quite interesting. A hobo says, wanted to know where the parish house was. And of course he shouldn't see it for the county church there. And he was talking to Father Fitzgerald, mm-hmm. and he says, Father said to him, he says, well, what do you want? He says, I'm going over to see the priest to see if I can get something to eat. Well, he says, you're talking to the priest. Now, I know he put down his pocket and got some money. How much, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I never forget that as long as I live to the day I die. Priest, mind you. Mm-hmm. But the people in Hobbygrass, one, old Murray Vandiver died. He was the man who owned that scow. Mm-hmm. Father Fitzgerald had the toll of the bell in the toll, in the church, which was close to us, mm-hmm. he had a toll. Mm-hmm. And the Catholic people raised so much commotion that they told the bishop about it from all of them. And Father Fitzgerald had to go sing. Now, Bob Vandiver told me this. She was with me, I think, when she told me. And anyhow, he told him how good Father Fitzgerald had been to them, see? Mm-hmm. And what he did, he told the bell. The man told Father Fitzgerald, he says, I would have done the same thing. You know what I mean? Father Fitzgerald was good to him. Mm-hmm. I never get that thing. Mm-hmm. was that. But my boyhood days were mostly right down here on this farm. Now the first farm below the railroad here, starting with that one, to the mouth of the river, to the bay, is around about 8-9 miles, see?
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, all the time I'd get up here, be like in the morning, and come up with the milk from my grandfather. It was a warehouse right across the way here, and then a milk house, and then the station, see?
Mm-hmm.
And I would bring the milk up. In those days, money was scarce. My grandfather had a man who worked for him and paid him $10 a month.
Mm.
See? So my grandmother used to send eggs up to the store and try it off for different commodities such as salt and pepper and coral. See?
Mm-hmm.
And we got our mail over here at the store. And like this morning's paper, you would get it this evening. Okay? Mm-hmm. All was slow. Everything was slow.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no fast money at all. Everything was slow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was sent up with bringing these eggs up. Enough for 10 cents worth to get me some candy. Much that big. Right across the bay there was a blacksmith. I used to make the mills up when I was a boy. Get them shod.
Mm-hmm.
My father's people lived right up the river here. Rollins was their name, and the Carrolls was down on the farmhouse, see?
Mm-hmm.
We all come from right around here now. I got a cousin who lives right back here and lives in a house much older than this one. Her name is Lewis, Grace Lewis, and my grandfather lived there years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right over here is a brick house, hard wires. He was 85, the 12th of this month. Raised up on his hill where Horace Sands is.
Hmm.
His brother owned it. His father owned it. Well, Flurry was the people that built over it from up the country. And Steve Warren bought it from him. And he sold it to Larry Stensel's father, I think it was. But now, I think Charlie Anderson's the number one man. But Larry Stensel still educated in that part. Right?
Mm.
And so, there wasn't much going on around here. Now, we got a picture here somewhere, if she can find it, of the old store.
Oh, it's right there.
Huh.
Mrs. Fletcher probably showed you that picture.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you remember going to this store?
Oh, huh? My goodness, yes.
You what?
Did you remember going to this store?
Remember the store?
Uh-huh.
Mm. Oh, my God, well, we lived right next door. A man named George Brown run that store. The Art Brown people was the ones, well, I bought this property off of the George Brown people years ago. 52 years ago.
Hmm.
And we had a large store house and all. And George Brown and his wife run the store. A fellow named Fletcher helped them, who was her brother. He died here a couple of weeks ago. So that goes away. So, anyhow, the way it went, the will, old Brownsville. You see, all this property back here used to belong to Browns years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And right back in my house here, it's Bud Browns, but one of the Browns married a man named Alec Fry, who was a farmer down in Gunpowder Neck. That's before the government bought it, see?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's got a son that's working for the county right now as one of the foremen. He don't have to work though, because I don't know, I can't prove it exactly, but it's around $400,000 or $500,000 he bought for his property over at Moose River. And so anyhow, when Mr. Brown died, Mrs. Brown took over the store. Then she died. Then Charlie Fry, he kind of tore down the store, which was right over here. Mm-hmm. There's a picture of it, you have it. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, the only living relative that they had was Edith Brown, who married Ellie Fry. And her name got to be Fry, too. Mm-hmm. And she had this one boy, Charlie. And he got, everything went to him. This belongs to him right now.
Mm.
That's right. And he's a nice fellow, so Charlie is. When he's working for the county, and I'm pretty sure that he's still a foreman in one of the gangs up there. Well, I haven't seen him real easily, but I used to see him when he come by her and all and talk to him. His name was Fry. So my grandfather down here on the farm, excuse me, used to go over to Fry's. We lived over near Bush River, and I'll never forget, my grandfather said that one day he was over to Fry's, was in corn husking time, and Ellie Fry was husking corn, and he had a pile over there, and he'd throw it over there, and every time he sewed one pile, one ear over, he had another one ready to go over.
Mm.
I'll never forget that. Now, my grandfather, from here down to the farm, was about 3 miles down this way. It's about 4 miles from here to the river this way, and 1 mile this way to the river. See?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I ain't been around here 52 years not know what's going on. So, I used to go to Milton with my grandfather up to here to Jerusalem. Take all day, 2-horse team, feed and stuff to get ground. And we leave in the morning around 7 o'clock and get back about 6 or 7 in the evening. Travel was slow in those days. There were no automobiles, nothing like that around here then.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I lived at Perryman for a while, for 4 years, and I had grass for quite a few, but I was mostly on weekends right down on this farm. And that's where I was practically raised, on the farm. And the Cadwalders, and well, in fact, they used to visit my grandmother. And my grandmother was also related to General Pershing, was in the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his mother and my grandmother were sisters.
Hmm.
Their name was Pershing, yeah. So you see, we ain't no bunch of bums. So that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to love to get down here, but I was on the farm most of the time because, I tell you, when I was a boy, I was always doing something like carrying the wood in, tying stuff from here at the corner to the pigs, and oh, goodness, well, I didn't have nothing to do. I was a clubhouse there, and we have about 3 or 4 big poles with fish lines on, and I'd get down the hog pen and get some worms. I spend the rest of the day down until the canal hooker over here and the urns of it over there, and there's the farmland. And I spend the rest of the day down the river.
Mm-hmm.
And we had it as a lane over there, of course, not much of it now. Oh, I guess it's about 3 miles long from the road down below here, down to where our home was. And this side of the home was a big wooden building that was built for the gunners in the fall of the year. One gentleman's name was, alcohol was named after him. Frank Raymond. He was one of the gunners. He had to have a pretty big job with the chores people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Frank Raymond, my uncle, was engineer on the B&O. Him and his brother Bill Carroll, was engineer over there too, on the Royal Blue. Of course, they don't run anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he always said that Bill Carroll was his favorite engineer. And Bill was dead and gone, but he's got a boy still living over to White Marsh. And Uncle Bill gave them the ground over there that they got their fire department on. He gave it to them. Now, my uncle, Johnny Carroll, used to be an operator here in Ashwood from 4 to 12. He quit and went in the store business here in Ashwood. The old store that used to belong to, what's it, man?
Rich Graham.
He belonged to them. And he made a good bit of money, and I made him his wife, he retired. And built a place over Gunpowder, on the other side of Gunpowder River. And, lots of things happened. See the wrecks and all that stuff. I've been about three or four wrecks, or never, never. I think God must have been with me. Yeah. That's it.
How about Mrs. Ron?
Huh?
How about Mrs. Ron? She was born in Ashwood?
Yeah, she was born in Ashwood.
I'm not as talkative as she is.
You're not?
No, but
maybe
don't have as good a memory.
She tell you the truth.
But I'm
the only thing I've told you is the truth. I don't lie.
I was 2 years old when we moved to Magnolia. And we also lived on a farm that is now Edgewood Arsenal. And my father was a track foreman. Made $1 a day, had 5 girls to raise, plus another girl and a boy that they raised, a grandson and a niece my mother raised. On $1 a day,
boy.
We had to walk from, well, it's just right inside the Magnolia Gate. We had to walk from there to where you turn on the Port Hole Road to the school. And on payday, if my father was working on the track where we walked up the track, you'd see him put his hand down his pocket. We each one got a nickel. That was our money to spend. And then, we've lived here 50 years, lived at Gunpowder, I guess, 12 years. We moved from the Arsenal to Gunpowder in 1918, right before the war ended. And then I went to work for the government. I worked for the government for 25 years in the gas mask factory, where they made all the gas masks and different things, protective clothing. And I could write a book about that, but things I wouldn't care to talk about.
While she's talking, my grandfather used to be a track foreman here. He lived with a brother here. And her father worked on the track under my grandfather. He got $1 a day. And in canning season, they work in a canning house to help get the extra dollars.
My mother was a
canning
mill midwife. Back in those days, when the doctor, sometimes the baby would be born before the doctor, old Dr. Roth, would get there. Sometimes she got paid for it, sometimes she didn't, most times she didn't.
They were wonderful people, wonderful. I tell you something, you're very something to say. There's 3 families of us lived in that house down the Gunpowder Bridge. Her oldest sister and her husband, I think one or two children. And me and my 2 children were born there. And it was father-in-law and mother-in-law, and I never heard them have a cross word. I'm telling you the truth. I never seen such wonderful people in my world.
But back in those days, like I said, there was no, we made our own, all the entertainment we had was the church, you know. We used to have the box socials. They were always a lot of fun. I guess you've never heard of those, have you?
No.
Where you would pack a lunch. and then wrap them, and then they would like to auctioneer them off. And sometimes, you know, and the boys would buy the lunches. The girls would prepare the box, and the boys would buy them, and then you had to eat with them. So there'd be several that we wouldn't care to eat with. And after we would get there, they'd watch you going in, you know, and after we'd get there, we'd repack the boxes so they'd be a different shape. then we had fun, real fun, you know.
The little church is still up there. My mother and father was married, and it was right up there in Magnolia.
There were no movies, no cars.
That
was our entertainment, was strawberry festivals and whatever went on in the church.
Her mother, with the help of three or four other women, would have a great day in frying oysters with this little hall back the church.
Mm-hmm.
Because the travel was slow. You didn't see people very much. Now these people down here in that kind of city, though, which was about 8 or 9 miles long for the head of the bay, we see them about once a year.
Mm-hmm.
There was Cadwalders owned this land down here, all except about three or four farms, to my knowledge. He owned the land of my grandmother. And anyhow, one Christmas night, Miss Tess Skelly, an elderly lady who was a widow, she had a farm right down there. And we had a barrel of cider in the cellar, see? And it was so hard nobody drank it but my grandfather and me. So she had a fellow named Bob Glass. Of course he was a little mentally deformed, but he wouldn't hurt anybody. So Christmas night, Miss Tess Scully and my grandmother went in a parlor. I used to have parlors those days.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandfather sent me to the cellar to get a pitcher of cider. I got it. And this fella, he really liked it. I drank one glass, my grandfather drank one, but my grandfather said, well, Cynthia, go down the cellar and get some more cider for Bob. Well, when he went, got ready to go home, I hadn't seen Miss Scully for several months after that. She was our age. She said to me, you little bugger, you. She said, you made my husband, my Bob. She called him Bob. Bob was his husband. You made my Bob drunk. I said, what do you mean, Miss Tess? She says, you gave him too much to drink. Well, what happened? When they got home, she went to bed. And he went out to put the horse away, but when he did, he said, I got in the stable, something to store his horse. She said, you little bugger, you said you made my Bob drunk. I'll never forget that one.
Yeah, we used to have canning houses. There was one right up in the little village right across from the church.
Hmm.
And my mother and a couple of us girls, whoever was available, she'd take along with her and peel tomatoes or pack tomatoes. And I think you peel tomatoes, you get 5 cents for a big bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about the only thing. There was just...
Well, my grandfather had a field right down below here. And I can remember when I was a boy, I'd come with a man with a two-horse team to bring the tomatoes up to this can house she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you had Polish people that came out from the city, and they had, you know, little huts like for them to live in,
mm-hmm.
to work all summer in the canning house.
Mm-hmm.
You see, years ago, work was awful scarce around here. Only thing it was the railroad and the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame. From here to my grandfather's house, where I would say we've been 3 miles by lane, and on the side of lane between here and that corner there, there'd be a black heart cherry tree. And they'd just be loaded and drop right over in the sand, nobody to pick them. But there was four trees. We had the red hearts. After school, I was right down here picking for my grandmother.
Hmm.
See? But the black hearts, it was a shame that somebody couldn't have been there to pick them. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
We do have something that probably would be valuable for the county. It was the history of Edgewood Arsenal before it was born, but we only have one book, and I couldn't...
Yes, I was that book on the hurry, but I speak about Colonel Sproker.
Mm-hmm.
He been dead about 10 years. He lived up on the pike, and he wrote this book. He his brother lives across the way here in his brick house. He was born and bred over here, right up on this farm. There's a big guy I talked to. His name is Howard Dwyer. There's three of those brothers who were in the same war.
That's the story of Gunpowder Neck.
Hmm.
And that's what that was, the Gunpowder Neck before the government bought it.
Uh-huh.
And it would be very interesting, but
huh.
That's the only book we have.
Uh-huh. What was it like before they made it into the arsenal? What?
It was a farm. That's where Charlie Fry was born, on the farm.
That's where the colored people lived. There were no colored people around the outside of those who lived on the...
These colored people lived up in Denby Town, mm-hmm. were the Denbys that lived down in the Gunpowder Neck. See? That's where they lived before they moved to Joppa Town.
Hmm.
Denby's was a lane.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
in the wintertime, all the thing you could do would be trap. And my great-grandfather, his name was, Rembo. He was the overseer of the whole neck.
Hmm.
Load up his wagon with different commodities, take it down and give it to the colored people.
Hmm.
And that house is still down here, right across from Ridgewood Arsenal. There's a moving picture there. It's called Lonely Lodge. My aunt had a picture of it up in the house. She'd been dead a couple of years, Mrs. Sprecher. And I failed to get that from her before she passed away. That picture of that house.
Mm-hmm.
Brick entertained from England.
Hmm.
Yeah. She told me that, and I believe her.
I think that's the house the commanding general lives in.
Who?
The commanding general of Edgewood Arsenal lives in.
That I can't answer.
Of course, it's been restored.
Mm-hmm.
But it's right across the road from the Moulton pictures. I know that.
Yeah, it's down in that area.
Hmm.
But that would be very interesting for the county.
Mm-hmm. Was this area, did the railroad have a lot of effect on this area because of the, you know, having jobs and then the lines being able to?
Oh, yes. In the early part of Edgewood Arsenal, they brought all the workers by train, and then they had a railroad that run from Edgewood into the Arsenal Tunaville Railroad, where they carried passengers.
Hmm.
And because there were no cars then. If you would see a car, oh my goodness, that was something to look at.
And then, let's see, well, now did Magnolia, I guess it was sort of a little village in here. And
that's
then
right.
Where else, like, would you get most of the things that you needed here, right in the little village, or where else could you go?
Well, you would go 12 miles to Bel Air. Well, we had many trains a day stop here at the station.
Mm-hmm.
We
Well, we had about 11 trains a day each way,
mm-hmm.
local trains would stop here.
And of course, we being all railroaders had passes. You could get on the train and ride to Baltimore. My mother used to go to Bel Air Market. That's where we bought our, other than the things we could get from this little store here.
Mm-hmm.
But she would go twice a week to Bel Air Market. And carry, I don't know how she did it, but she would carry two market baskets full of food up the, there were a good many steps at Biddle Street Station. And other than that, there were no ways to get on. Horse and buggy. Days, you know, that's how you go. We take about 4 hours to go to Bel Air.
Right down here, where this here Reardon Synagogue is, down here in the woods, was called Temperance Park. The reason we call that, on Saturday nights, there'd be a bunch of men would get a keg of beer and go over there to drink it. Called it Temperance Park.
Huh.
I mean, oh,
a good,
I hear
10 men. A good many people rode the train, you know, that worked at Edward Arsenal and would get off at Magnolia. And like I say, my father was a track foreman here, and one Christmas Eve, they were waiting for the train, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, the platforms, well, you've never seen an old platform at an old station. Well, they're very narrow, and there was this crowd of workmen waiting for the train, and they saw a train coming, and they thought it was the train that stopped. Instead of that, it was a fast train, and the ones in the back shoved the ones in the front right into the train. I think there were about 9 people killed at that time. My father had to go out there and pick up the bodies and the pieces. They had, some of them had holly and taking home, you know, little Christmas trees.
Did you get a picture of the station for it?
I don't have a picture of the station.
I mean,
let's see. What about your? How did the? What were the effects on the community when Edgewood Arsenal came up? Did people resent having to leave their farms and things?
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Sure, they had to leave them.
Yeah.
Right here where my grandfather lived, he'd been over 30 years. He had to get out.
And like
in the 1017.
A lot of them were just overseers, you know, and they had to get out and buy their homes. They didn't own the farms.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get
out. Well, my grandfather didn't own his farm.
Right.
He farmed on shares, but he bought a farm in the meantime up here from the lakes above, about 2 miles above here.
Mm-hmm.
And then my Uncle Johnny Carroll went away in business, he built a house over on Trimble Road in Edgewood where my cousin's living in it now, Mrs. Greenberg. She had 6 children. Her husband was a major in the Army and went away to war. And I was over there with her looking after them kids more than I was at home. I'm telling you the truth. I don't lie.
Now, we lived on a farm, but we didn't own it. This was a bachelor that owned the farm, and we just, I guess my mother rented out, I don't know. I don't know what how they arranged that, whether they just lived in the house to board him or whether they paid rent. I don't know. So then when we moved from there in 1918 to Camp Paddock in the railroad company's house, which the station, it was a station there.
Now, where was that? I'm not sure where that is.
Gunpowder. You know where the Gunpowder River is?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a mile down the track.
Just a mile down the river.
Just a mile.
And that's the Gunpowder River.
18-room house. That was the station.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother kept orders of these men who worked at Edgewood.
Mm-hmm.
She had orders, so the house was filled up.
Mm.
And that was the something else, because there was no electric, no plumbing.
No, we didn't even have electricity here.
Mm-hmm.
I was on freight, see?
Uh-huh.
Worked from Bayview to Harrisburg. the railway, what we call the port road, the single track railroad, 44 miles to Columbia from Perryville. And coming this way, when we would leave Harrisburg to come down this way, we'd stop at the ice house. Oh, I'd get a chunk of ice about that big and that high. Of course, I was younger and I was I'd always get the flagman to throw it off at gunpowder to my mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way we got our ice.
Huh.
I guess it must have been in the late 20s before they had electric down here.
Well, when did we get electricity here?
I imagine it was in the late 20s.
Well, the reason I say that, my Uncle Harry Sprecher was a county commissioner, and he told us all that if he was elected, he was going to get lights in Magnolia. Well, he did. That's what he got. That was so far distant. Of course, they don't run small bulbs, but they were lights.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. He used to work on the railroad, too. He worked as a clerk in the freight house at Howdy Grass. And, he worked in the freight house at Howdy Grass, but he was sent down to Edgewood to help old Mr. Numbers, who was Asian. And while being there, that's when the men was coming out to see about the buying of this ground. He went, home, he lived right close by,
mm-hmm.
and got his car and took all these men down there,
mm-hmm.
big boys. And so he got a job with the government in the office, and he quit the railroad. We've done a wonderful thing because he got to be a colonel, one of these dress colonels, I call them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a chief executive officer in there. I guess he didn't make that devil. He did about 10 years. And then back before that, after he retired, he went and worked for the county as a county commissioner. Worked for.
Mm-hmm.
I forget who that was. We had three commissioners in the county then.
Mm-hmm.
We had no refrigeration, no ice man, and of course, when Everett was working on the railroad, they used to throw us off ice. That's how we got our ice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the men, when we lived on the arsenal, the men, I guess they knew my father, and they used to throw ice off to us. No ice man, nothing.
Hmm.
But I think people were happier in those days, and now they have everything, and most happy.
Well, now, were there a lot more people around and moving in here at Edgewood?
Not in Magnolia, really.
Hmm.
It's just been in the recent years that people have built houses, you know, and moved in. But there's few now, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
Very few. Because Magnolia is, Magnolia Road and Fort Hall Road, and that's Magnolia.
Mm-hmm.
You know where this place got the name of Fort Hall Road?
Yeah.
Well, it used to be a artillery down here in the arsenal. Come out every day for their exercise. Come out here and up the Fort Hall Road to the, what's that road?
Trimble Road.
And they give it the name of Fort Hall Road. That's where Fort Hall got the name.
Hmm.
Well, that was where the artillery was. They named that part of the arsenal Fort Hall.
Now, how did you come to work at the gas mask factory?
Well, my husband was furloughed. And I had a friend who spoke to somebody in authority. And that's how I got my job. At that time, you were supposed to have experience. And I had never worked. I was 36 years old and had never worked anywhere.
Mm.
But I got the job anyway. And then after he got back to work, I had no reason to stay home, so I just stayed on until, and I was inspector, supervisor of inspection, so I had a pretty good job, so I just stayed on
mm-hmm.
25 years.
Hmm. Now, what was it like to be in there? What kind of things did you do? I mean, were they making gas masks?
Gas masks, canisters for the gas masks, protective clothing.
Hmm.
We had a carpenter shop, and at one time I was had 150 girls working under me.
Hmm.
And, well, I must have worked. They had three shifts, and I think on those three shifts there were around about 3,000 people worked there, and about 1,000 on each shift. And, it was interesting. It was, of course, during the war we worked 1 year, 7 days a week, without a day off. And sometimes you'd work a double shift, work from 8 to 4 and 8 to 12, then you'd get up and go back to work at 8 o'clock in the next morning. But then, you know, everybody was all hepped up and you didn't mind that.
A lot of patriotism about
that. Right, right.
And while she's speaking, I was a freight conductor. I had charge of 7 men on the crew, including myself. So I told her several times, just leave that authority to that gate when you come out. I'm out here, not in there. Yeah, she was bossy, you know. I wasn't going for me, but I was used to being the boss. And I told her right up and down, I said, look, your authority ends right at that gate.
Yeah, that was an experience. We had some bad experiences. A couple of explosions. Two people that I worked with and all were killed. One was right at the time, right at that 20 minutes after 4, right before quitting time.
Mm.
I think there were about 9 people killed in that. Not in our building, but a building right close to our building. Then they had another one. It wasn't quite as bad. But as far as I know, that's the only 2 mishaps that they had. Which, knowing all the explosive things that was handled there, they're good. I know one time I went to work and our canister line was closed down. We couldn't make it. Then all that was hushed up then, you know. We didn't know why or why. Well, we knew, but we weren't allowed to tell. But the reason it was closed down, we had no gas mask that was any good. The Germans had a new gas. Had made a new gas that our canisters were no good for.
Mm-hmm.
So it was closed down for 3 days, but we'll see if it started back up again.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But I think about 10 years later it came out in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
But you dare not say anything about it then.
Was there much effects of the depression around here? Was it pretty hard?
Oh, no, no, yes. Really were. And we would have been in the breadline if it hadn't been for my mother and father and his mother and father.
Yeah. There was no such thing as rocking chair money in my young days. I was on the railroad about 13 years when I was furloughed. Do you remember the depression?
Mm-mm.
Well, you ought to be glad you don't. Because, when I was furloughed, I think it was about 13 months, wasn't it? Something like that, I was furlowed. Well, altogether was about 16 months.
Yeah.
Furloughed. Right? No jobs, nowhere. And my mother-in-law and father-in-law were living here with us, and they kept us.
Yeah.
My mother and father and Harvey Grasser helped to do it.
That's
no.
How come I went to work.
No such thing. Mm-hmm. My God, man, I even had to stop smoking cigarettes, although I haven't smoked for years now. And, everything was tight. I believe tight. You would be glad you wasn't around. I believe that was in 31, wasn't it?
It was in 36, because that's when I went to work and you were furloughed then. But then you could go to the store with $5 and buy enough groceries for a week.
Oh my Lord, yeah.
Now you can go to the store and get a couple loaves of bread and a couple pounds of butter, and that's $5.
Well, there was no such thing as money around here when I was young. We'd get everything with eggs over at the store. Yeah, had a big grind of coffee machine over there. Well, my grandmother wanted coffee. I had a way to ground it and had the eggs to pay for it. Yeah. I used to bring the meals up to right across from where the, where the store was, a man named Skillman. His daughter still lives right up there on this side of the road, Blanche. I'd bring the mules up there to have them shod. And while I was waiting for them, I'd go up to my other grandfather's. And my grandmother sent a note up to give me 10 cents for the candy, my dear. Man, I'd get a bag like that full of candy. Years ago. Yeah.
I can't think of anything. This family that lived up where the Harper Sands is now. There was a family of 18 children lived on that farm, and they lived on the land. There was nobody working. Well, I mean, when they're all coming up, they were
right.
Lived
they
on
got
that
one
farm,
share, and the owner got two shares. But now my grandfather's farm, he got half from Ken Wilders and from the Philadelphia. He had a very good owner of the farm. Ken Wilders owned practically all from here. The Bush River, or the Gunpowder rather, I would say it's around about 9 miles taken by road, see? Mm-hmm. But if you go over the railroad, right down straight down, it's only a mile. Mm-hmm. And you get down there to get to the bay, it's about 6 miles. Well, they got a place down here about 3 miles from the bay, a point out there called Maxwell's Point. And there's trees there from all over the world that the Kid Wilders had put there, and the government put their names on them and where they were from.
Huh.
That's facts, true facts. And they used to have a mansion there and all. The man used to come, where my grandfather lived. There was a big house, clubhouse, they called it. Where the doctors and different people come to gun. And when they wanted to go gunning early in the morning down the neck, they go in and it's a big wagon that they had, and my grandfather took them down the neck gun. Mm-hmm. They were money people, see? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mr. Gann, who lived on Maxwell Point, had black snakes for pets. When he would come up to the store in his horse and buggy, he'd have the black snakes in the wagon with him.
Yeah, he had black snakes. Can you imagine that? Mm-hmm. He was a caretaker on Marshall's Point. He one morning he went to make a fire, and he put too much oil on it, and he burned himself up.
Mm.
Down was his name. That's years ago. I used to go over there quite a bit after I was married, and crab. And I go up on that point, nice and breezy on a hot day, and sit up there and wait for the fly to get more crabs. And nobody to bother you, all by yourself. I used to get fellas from the railroad to come over and go with me for company.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it did.
Mm. How did the village of Magnolia get its name?
No.
I think from magnolia trees.
That's right. Right down
that
here
in the
swamp.
And here,
full of trees.
Full of magnolia trees.
Hmm.
You know what a magnolia tree is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether. I thought maybe that was one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, as far as I know, that's what I was always told.
Yeah, you see. Down here where they got this brickworks now, although they're not using it, that's where all the magnolia trees were.
Hmm. Do you feel like you're sort of isolated from the rest of the county down here?
Well, no, not now, because of the automobile.
Hmm.
You know, you can maybe
no,
go to
no.
Bel Air in 15 minutes.
You guys can go up to Jerusalem about 20 minutes from now, and it used to take all day to go to Jerusalem. Stop up here to, what's the name of that corner?
Shipley's
Corner. And my grandfather would get a bag of ginger snaps. So I'd buy that bake for 10 cents. That would be our lunch. Well, we'd be going up there all day. On the ground to feed and come back home and be eating.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting, that book.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it, now listen, that was San Domingo Farm they lived on. Now I understand, years ago, that they used to auction slaves off there. He used to kill 25 hogs every fall for their own meat. And boy, I'm telling you, that meat was good. You know, the hickory smoked it, but it took time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to look. Well, many of the time, a thrasher sheen would come there all around the last of June, the first of July. And grandmother sent me out there to the shed to get one of these hams, a great big old ham, all be moldy. You'd turn your nose up at it, but she'd just take and wipe the mold off. We had them days. We had a couple of people in the kitchen, and we'd sit in the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd put a tin all together. He used to thrash quite a bit of grain. As a boy, I used to hold half a bushel tub there, and when it got full, we'd put it in a bag. But then the next year, when a thrasher came, they didn't have any blower on it. They used to have blowers on the thrash machine, you know, to blow it around and make a stack.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't have that, they'd have to take about six men. My grandfather even put me in with them and moved that all around to make a stack. My grandfather was German. He come to this country when he was 8 years old. From Germany, Germany. And I was a Dutchman, didn't know nothing but work. I worked all day down here thinning corn. And after supper, as he said, I said, look, Grandpa, sit right out of the woods and get your grandmother's blackberries. You have to work it all day. Oh, he didn't know the end of work. And the way I could do in the daytime, keep my eye on where he was, then I'd get that fish line and get down the horn plug and get worms and get out of the river. That's the only way I could do it. I had to watch him.
One thing we used to have a lot of fun with was barn days.
Mm-hmm.
That was there were no dance halls or
mm-hmm.
anything around then, but they had the barn dances and do the square dances, and that was another little entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have Chautauqua? Is that anything you had around here? The traveling minstrel shows and things?
No. We used to have little plays of the local people, you know, in the church.
Mm.
Tom Thumb weddings and little plays like that.
Mm.
We never had anything like that. Either.
What's that one?
People that come around the shows.
Huh?
People that come around with shows. No, we never had that. All the only thing we had is they would maybe a couple times a year have a play they call it. some wedding and different things like that. Mm-hmm. No, there was very little entertainment. Of course, you'd have to be, and it had, then you didn't, you listened to your parents then if there was something going on, and then if they said no, you couldn't go. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't go. And if my mother would say, no, you can't go, then we'd go ask my father if we could go. He'd say, what'd your mother say? Well, she said no. Well, says no, that's no.
Huh. What was your school? Did you have to walk to school?
We had a school right as you turned. Yes, we walked, but it was just about a half a mile again. Right as you turn in on Fort Hill Road to the left is where the school house was.
To the right?
Coming into Fort Hill Road.
Going out there to the right side.
Mm-hmm. And it was to the eighth grade, and then we went to Hambergrass, rode to Hambergrass by train.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you like?
One room school, yeah. And then they talked, well, there's different kind of things in school these days, but kids were mischievous in those days, you know. They would, ceiling would be filled with spitballs. They would ring the bell and pull the bell real hard and turn the bell over so they could get up there and fix it. We had to carry water from a spring right here on the farm to have drinking water. But all those things, you know, kids weren't too good back then, but they didn't do the bad things they do now. You know, they were just little minor things. Kind of have a fire, you'd go in and make it.
How did you get, let's see, you got on the railroad pretty, that was your first job?
Railroading, yes, first and only job.
Did it change a lot? Did the train, the way that the trains worked and everything change a lot?
Well, nowadays they have electric engines. My days were steam engines. And I was a brakeman and a fireman and an engineer on the farm. And a coal would get back a little bit, the brakeman would get up there and shove it down. See?
Mm-hmm.
Now the same thing, I used to help them quite a bit. And coming up here at Edgewood, they had a trough, so many feet long with water in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you pull the little lever and that slowed the tank down, get the water, see?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as you got the water, if it didn't go over the side, I just scale over the top of the coal tank.
Mm-hmm.
And see, it was three braces in there. And I'd tell the engineer how much water we got. If we didn't get to how much, we were stopping to get it again in Prairieville. See?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it was. And we used to get a relief farm from Prairieville to Midway. That's about 22 miles on the Port Road, single track railroad. And then from there to Columbia, I used to fire. I didn't have to do it, but I just did it to help him out.
Mm-hmm.
Young, single, you know, at the time. Oh, they were the good old days, steam engine days. And we get, it was eight hours and a half from Bayview to Harrisburg by way of Porterville.
Mm.
A little bit, wasn't quite that long of a way of Baltimore around on the old northern central. And I would always help the farmers from Midway up to Columbia to give him a blow. Of course, he'd already had a blow from the relief farmer. But we liked those good old steam engine days. I tell you, we had a superintendent once, a man named Buckaroo. He was right strict. But he said, when they did away with the steam engines, they took away the thrill of railroading.
Mm.
My mom liked people. My uncle got me a job in the auction here in a heating plant. I'd have been better off for a day, I'd have been a pension. But I seen these freight trains going by. I said, no, I'm doing. So I quit. I was worked 2 days down here. I went back on the railroad.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's just in my blood, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
And I got two uncles who were engineers on the B&O. They're dead now. One uncle owned a fancy, he's dead. And an operator. Yeah, operator. We were good enough to make a horse.
Hmm.
And my uncle, Jimmy Rounds, he used to be operator at Edgewood. Stop us there, I'd put my tires, see how long we were going to lay there, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the duty of somebody else on the crew to identify the shop.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. I really liked it, to tell you the truth, because I was practically my own boss all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew what to do. The way it is with me right now. I still got that in my head. If I tell you I'm going to be here at 10 o'clock, I'll be here at 10 o'clock. It won't be 10:15 or 10:10. It'll be 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
But I got time from railroad. They use time to admit.
Mm-hmm.
My father was track foreman at Happy Grass. Right? And I'd be on a freight coming from Bayview going to Harrisburg. I always stopped at Happy Grass 9 times out of 10. And I used to go up the tower to the tool house to see my father. Now one morning, I'll never forget this, he sent the men out to work at 7 o'clock. One colored fellow came there 5 minutes after 7 and he sent him home. Now of course that was before labor release, and he told him, he says, we go to work at 7 o'clock, not 7:05. Now if you want to work her, come out tomorrow 7 o'clock.
Mm.
No matter how strict he used to be. Of course, work was scarce too, you know. I felt so sorry for that fella. Mm. But the old man was good. Now they used to once a year, they would suspend and then send an inspection car around to the big boys were sitting on the back of it and watched the railroads, you know. My father, we lived at Perryman, got the thrash, $50, 3 years out of the four. And he moved me to Happy Grass. But when he got that prize of $50, he would buy oysters and beer for the men. The other ones were the most beautiful sight I ever seen in my life, from Bush River Net Crossing, that's the River Can, by Mr. Scan House, along kind of a just like that occurred to Bush River, and my father had all of them men to move that stone just all perfectly in line. I'd love to have a picture of that.
Mm.
But this bunch you can run the railroad today, it's altogether different from when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I was there, it was the old Pennsylvania. Then it got to be the Penn Central. And then I left in 60 when it was Penn Central. And the Pennsylvania combined. Now it's Conrad and, oh God knows what all, Conrad and Amtrak, and I don't know who all the names of this.
Mm-hmm.
Got a bunch of them. Well, you look out here, you see glass clouds and railroads. You never see that years ago. No,
mm-hmm.
Indeed. Not in my father and track world. My father and all the track world. Things have really changed.
Did they take a lot of the crops that, you know, from farmers around here?
Sure.
Did they carry crops and things like your tomatoes and things? Did they go out on rail?
Do what?
Did they carry the tomatoes out on the train?
Tomatoes?
Yeah, we had the canning houses took care of.
Oh, no, they have canned houses around, and we used to take them in the two-horse team to the canned house. My grandfather had a two-horse team would bring them up there.
But they didn't use the train to carry the crops?
Hmm?
They didn't use trains to carry the produce and things?
Well,
no,
sir, not to my knowledge.
No.
But I do know out in the bay, a friend of mine used to fish. I used to go out there once in a while and help him on the same fish. He died here last year, by the name of Frank Beck. They would haul tomatoes up the bay in these big schooners. But we didn't haul one of them.
They
haul
the milk. They haul the milk by train. The farmers would bring the milk up and it would be go to Baltimore by train.
I'll tell you what we did haul. We used to haul quite a few watermelons on the trains.
But they weren't grown here. They weren't grown here.
Wasn't what?
They were not grown here. Is that
it was southern stuff. I worked on a freight from Potomac Yard, Virginia, with Har Simas Cove, New Jersey, a distance of 204 miles. That's the longest freight run they had. And every 100 miles a run, I got a day's pay. See? And I laid over there at night in Har Simas Cove and come back the next day. Hello. Dog. What was her Sailor was her name? What kind of breed was she?
Cocker Spaniel.
Yeah, Cocker Spaniel. And when I blow that whistle up on the motor of late years, she'd have to hold him. She didn't need to be out there underneath the train. And when she held him and let him go, she'd go out and get that grip of mine and bring it in here. Remember that? Sailor. And then I got to ride in the hump down here, and one day I come in from work, and bump, I said, oh my God, quarter four, I've run over a Sailor. I did. But let me tell you something. If you have a dog and ever gets hurt, don't pick him up, because I picked this dog up, and I had one devil of a job of getting my hand out of his jaws. Believe me, my uncle, the one I speak of, a Spraker, he had a dog. He come down with his pistol and shot him for me. We were all cried over that. That's the reason today I don't have no dog. Because we the same as one of the family. I'd be sitting up here, he'd be up here on my lap. See? And I'd work from 8 to 4 down here to Bayview home. I'd leave here around 7 a little after. And I'd get back home about 3:30, 4 o'clock, and sometimes we get home a little early and then have a trip to hump right away while they'd leave us go. We could pay for 8 hours, see? So, that's the reason that my dog, I left him loose, he'd always sit out front there. Well, I came in the evening, I guess he knew about what time I'd be in, and he watched for me to run over there, my car was sitting over there. Boom, boom. I said, oh my God, I'm a little Sailor. He still waiting. He ran right through the car. That was it. Yeah, I got a car out there now, but the doctor told me 3 years ago that due to this arthritis, what did he say? It was,
your reflexes.
Huh?
Your reflexes were slow.
Yeah, my reflexes are slow. And that's the reason I'm not supposed to drive. I got a car I bought 3 years ago, sitting out there. I haven't got 10,000 miles on it at all. So I just thought, well, if they're East Warner, I am. So I've been thinking of going to Aberdeen to pass another examination, because from here down to Bayview is 17 3/4 miles. Each way. And I run it five days a week. And I never, thanks to God above, I never have an accident. But when the doctor told me here some time ago, 3 years ago, that my reflexes were slow, I quit. I have another car. Some of the rest of the time, you just go ahead. It's in good shape right up there. It's a corner. So I said, but there's times now when I'm sitting around today that I wish I had my car, I could go see some of my friends.
What do you think about how Edgewood and Joppa have sort of just closing in on you a little bit. What do you think about that?
Well, I think we're very fortunate here because we could have been the same thing, but the county bought this property in back of us and built two schools.
Mm-hmm.
On the three-foot hole goes around this way, and they have a middle school and an elementary school on the four-hole road going out towards Trimble.
Mm-hmm.
So we're more fortunate in that way.
Did you ever think that Joppa Town and Edgewood would grow like they did?
No, never did, because everybody said, well, they couldn't build in Joppa Town because that's all the swamp.
Yeah, they used to call that.
But they did, said, well, they'll never build houses there.
They used to call that Pin Oak Swamp over there, Joppa Town. I was under there many a time when I was a boy.
Well, it isn't good because we have too many low cost housing. Yeah, and we have a lot of crime down in this part of Harford County. Really, I guess the highest crime of any part of Harford County. They wouldn't drop dead. I don't know, but when you have your monitor on at night and listen to the things that go on, you couldn't believe it.
Yeah, we got one grandson, the deputy sheriff.
Oh.
And that's one reason we're so interested in what's going on at nighttime.
You're going to have a lot of stuff on there that...
It's interesting to see how you feel about that.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, now this part of Magnolia hasn't changed that much.
Mm-hmm.
There's practically no new houses down in this area. Because the reason the ground was all tied up, nobody could buy ground because the left that it shouldn't be sold.
Hmm.
But then when they, the last of the Brown family, you know, then they started selling.
I always used to have a garden here in the summer. I was off 2 days a week, but that's arthritis. I don't have anything anymore. And from here to the corner right there, is where my garden was. It's not no more.
Mm.
I told the fellow, well, I didn't use it. Last year, a fellow did use it, but he didn't take care of it. The weeds got the best of it.
Oh.
Where
so
do you live?
Right in Bel-Air.
Right in Bel-Air.
Mm-hmm. We've overgrown ourselves, too.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. But Bel-Air itself hasn't changed a whole lot, has it? The town of Bel-Air.
Yeah, I think it has.
You think?
You live in Bel-Air, do you?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know many people up there. Tell you the truth or not.